Hey, this is Kevin Lyman from the Vans Warped Tour. You're listening to Rebel Radio. Fuck you, Josh.
What's up? This is Rebel Radio.
What up? What up? This is DJ Newmark.
This is Peanut Butter Wolf.
It's your boy. It's okay.
Keep checking out Rebel Radio.
Rebel Radio.
This is Rebel Radio.
We're in the place right here. Rebel Radio is going down.
What did you say, Rebel Radio?
Oh, wait. Let's do it again.
Rebel Radio.
Yo, what's up, Rebels? Welcome back to Rebel Radio. This week, we're going to kick off festival season. We got a bunch of good stuff planned for you. The next few weeks, we're going to come at you live from Coachella. Well, not live, recorded live on the field at Coachella. Obviously, Coachella's over, but I was there and took my microphone and sat down with a few different folks. I'm not going to tell you who they are just yet. We got some surprises up our sleeves, but some great episodes coming at you from Coachella. Will not be coming at you live from the Fire Festival. I know you know what that's all about, but we're gonna kick off festival season with my man Kevin Lyman. Kevin is the founder of the Vans Warped Tour. If you don't know Vans Warped Tour, it's the punk rock gathering of the year. They do over 750,000 people through their doors each year. They have from the biggest punk bands to, you know, all kind of up-and-comers. They got charities that they're launching out of Warped Tour. They're working with brands to integrate them into the community. It's just a great, great property. I think this is now their 22nd year. He's going to tell us what it's like to build longevity in that business. Kevin's also been the founder of a bunch of other tours, the Taste of Chaos, the Mayhem Festival, festival called It's Not Dead. If you're into punk rock or metal, you've definitely probably spent some time in one of Kevin's events. He's got just some brilliant lessons about being just a hands-on leader. I met Kevin many years ago and was trying to do some business with him, and I remember we sat down for a meeting. He had just come back from the Warped Tour, and like that night he was going out to see another show, another band play. The dude's just unstoppable. This episode is also a little bit of the history of West Coast punk rock. He's going to drop so many names on it, on you, that if you're into that kind of music, you're in for a real treat. Good stuff with Kevin Lyman coming up right after our EDM.com track of the week. That was our EDM.com track of the week. That was Tusk with a track called Smoke. I hope you love it, and I hope you love this interview with Kevin Lyman. So
thanks, man. I appreciate it.
No problem.
Having you here, you know, I've been a huge fan of Warped Tour forever. I don't know if you remember, a while ago, I had this idea that we should do an Herb tour when I was at Herb magazine.
Right.
And I wanted to do it with you, and then we never got our shit together.
Yeah, we tried a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wasn't it with Funkmaster Flex? Was he around in that time? Or
maybe.
Maybe, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. It was so long ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
But even then, like, I remember Raymond and I talking about it. It was like, if we're going to do this, like, let's do it.
It would have been fun. You know,
let's do it with the best.
Yeah, we've had some
people.
Right now, so we're like just really focusing on, you know, the Warped International stuff.
Yeah.
Warped and the cruise.
Yeah.
Idea.
Warped cruise?
Yeah, we're doing that.
No way.
It goes out, the Warped Rewind cruise, and
wow,
the end of October.
Yeah.
And then that It's Not Dead punk show that I did 2 years ago, we're doing again this year.
That's cool. So. And then you have the other festivals, Chaos and that stuff?
Chaos is kind of on a hold right now. And, you know, that's a big thing now, if you know, not to force a festival. I think so many people are put in situations of, you know, for feeling they have to do something every year.
Sure. So. Well, I guess if that's your only thing, you kind of have to do it.
Yeah, maybe that might push you over the edge.
Totally. Well, dude, I appreciate you making time. I'm excited to learn a little bit about kind of how you do all this and all that stuff. So I always kind of like start at the beginning. And I know you've been doing this a long time, but I want to go back even
farther
before that.
The Golden Voice days.
Yeah, even before that.
The college
just how,
days.
How you even got into music.
Yeah.
As a fan, like, do you remember the first record that you ever bought?
Simon and Garfunkel. Yeah. Greatest hits.
Hello, darkness, my old friend. I've come to talk with you again. Because a vision softly creeping left its seeds while I was sleeping.
Your punk kids would be,
you know, I mean, I think the punk kids would be really shocked about the wide breadth of music I listen to.
Yeah.
But I think that's been from, you know, it's been my whole thing, you know, working in the clubs in LA when I was doing 320 shows a year.
Wow.
And you were working every kind of music.
Yeah.
And I think that first Warped Tour was reflective of that.
Is that right?
When you go back to first Warped Tour in 95, you know, I thought Seaweed fans would like No Doubt fans, which would like Sublime, which crossed, but then you put Orange 9mm and Quicksand and all these bands into it. And
so where'd the idea come from to even do that?
Well, you know, for me, it was, I think that lineup came because I'd been doing that. And I thought, you know, these kids are all the same kids. You know, in LA, it was always like, I'd work a metal show, and I could never understand why metal shows were $10 and the shirts were $10 and our punk shows were $5 and the punk shirts. I said, it's the same kid.
Yeah.
And I think I've always kind of say that, you know, it's the same type of kid loves music.
Yeah.
It's just how do you, you know, expose them to different things.
Yeah.
And so that's been my whole bit thing through life. But like with Warped, it really was, you know, kind of the culmination of, you know, I was first stage manager of Lollapalooza in 1991.
Okay.
And then, been out working in that world, and by then I was running the world tours for Stone Temple Pilots, Nine Inch Nails, Jane's Addiction. Well, it was Porno for Pyros by then, but it was just overwhelming. You know, I used to say, you know, I'm glad they're all doing well and surviving, but at that point of their careers, it was like working for two drug addicts and a psycho on any given day, and you didn't know which was which.
Right.
So I was kind of always like a, you know, it was just, I was going to implode, and I wasn't having fun anymore. And I've always found that this business, you know, we got into it because it was fun.
Yeah.
Fell in love with live music because it was fun. And
do you remember when you realized that you wanted to be in the live music business?
Well, it was completely accidental, actually. I grew up in Claremont, east of here, around the Claremont colleges. And and it was a period of time, you know, out there was interesting because there was artists, you know, David Lindley and El Rayo Eke. And there was, it was more of a kind of a, I guess, a hippie vibe out there in Claremont. Growing up out there, we were, you know, I was exposed to that kind of music, I guess, early on. And then my first punk rock experience was in high school. A senior, this guy showed up at the school and he called himself Xerox Clone.
Okay.
That was his punk rock name.
Yeah.
And that was an exposure to punk rock.
Yeah.
So it was really fun. And we talked to them a little bit. And then I went to Cal Poly Pomona.
Okay.
And really, I wasn't going, I wasn't interested in, I wasn't, I liked music.
Yeah.
But I had no idea you could make a, you know, a career out of it.
Yeah.
And going to school there was an interesting time because it turned out that Perry Tolet, Paul Tolet, who runs Coachella and works at Golden Voice, he was going to school there. His brother was in a band called Chardon Square.
Okay.
And there was bands like The Targets. Yeah. And I started realizing as I was on the ski team and ski club in college, I needed to raise money for those events.
Sure.
And maybe we can integrate music into it.
Cool.
And I would bring bands out, and then I had a van too. So the van was like access to LA for my core of friends to go see shows.
Yeah.
So we'd go to the Whiskey and see the Plimsolls with the Go-Go's opening. And you know, that kind of world and starting to get exposed to music, but there was no glass house, there was no access for those bands to come to Cal Poly.
Right.
So we could bring them for $100 to come play on our college campus.
Wow.
So we'd get the Violent Femmes for $100 or TSOL and coming to play. And I started getting around this group of people that liked music, and I'd start throwing shows. And then the Inland Empire started having a kind of a scene out there with the Stepmothers and transformed into the Unforgiven. And you probably, I don't know, maybe you're still too young to know that era of bands.
Sort of.
There was a kind of a burning punk scene in the Inland Empire.
Really?
And I started blending it together, you know, and blending in my, I guess it was this, like hustling skills, I guess. It was renting fraternity houses for like $1,000 and doing five bands, $5, all the beer you could drink. And, you know, you get Fishbone out there and and you pay them $100 and they'd leave Angelo. The problem is you'd end up with like an Angelo for a week or Chris. Right. They'd just leave like enough equipment. They were always leaving more equipment and people at my house until I brought it back to a show in LA.
Yeah.
But that kind of was kind of interesting. And then I actually graduated college, and it's interesting going back to speak as an esteemed alumnus at Cal Poly recently, and I think it's funny that the guy who kind of, you know, my degree was in recreation administration is now going back and talking about people.
Yeah.
And I went off and ran a weight loss camp in Hawaii right after college. So I lived over in Hawaii for a while and came back pretty much broke.
Yeah.
And, you know, living in Hawaii was great, but it was, you know, taking two jobs and never really got to enjoy the surfing I went over there for in the water. I was always working.
Yeah.
But I came home, and I guess it was one of those things early on, like helping people. Just always try to help people. That was always my thing. And and some people wanted to help me. They said, hey, Kevin, Fender's Ballroom. Fender's needed a stage manager for a upstart promoter. Her name was Marcel Brumall. I think she was burning up her husband's trucking business, booking bands like Lone Justice, and the Blasters, and that kind of era of bands. And they were booking those shows. But in that same building, Gary Tovar, Golden Voice, was booking shows. And it turned out that Paul Tolette, who I had met, he's a few years younger, was now working for Gary. And we did a co-promote with, it was Motorhead. And at the Fender's Ballroom, you know, you can picture Motorhead in those days playing Fenders. And they needed someone that could actually, like, follow the contract writer. I really think that's what pretty much my qualification at that point was. And I don't want to, you know, it's disparaging to say that about someone. But Golden Voice was kind of run by the fist at that point. You know, you had Gary and those guys. But, man, the stage managers, like, you know, you just did the shows. And Rat Sound, who's now out there doing Coachella and everything else, was the starting PA company. And I still work with them.
Nice.
And, you know, I was able to kind of follow a writer on contract. And I think the band's kind of a, and Gary was starting to book bigger bands. So all of a sudden we did this co-promote and I got to kind of run the show on the production side. And it turned into more gigs with Golden Voice. And pretty, you know, within a couple years, I always had my own independent production company, but I was running all the Golden Voice shows in LA and taking, and I was always that punk rock world where, you know, people that worked in punk rock said, I don't work metal in that. But that during that period was also a busy time in L.A. The Sunset Strip was in full bore. Gazzari's, the Whiskey, Country Club. And those people, you know, Nelly up at the Country Club, Whoa Nelly Presents, needed a stage manager. And she was paying, like, punk was paying $75 a night. She was paying $100. So, you know, maybe that's the extra $10. I got a little bit piece of that, I guess, from stage managing those shows. But, you know, that bled into a whole world of, you know, the Warrants, the Leather Wolves, they kind of, so I was working, you know, Poison shows before when they were the opening band on the bill, Paradise, and that crazy time of metal. And then that grew into the, like, the Foundation forums, and I was still running all the alternative stuff, the punk stuff for Golden Voice, but that was turning into the Jane's Addiction, the Chili Peppers, Fishbones, and some of my life was kind of like, all of a sudden, the skating world started coming back into my life, the old Pipeline Skate Park in Upland, and Vision Clothing and things started needing a guy that could put on their events. So I started getting ideas of how do you blend this music together. So we, you know, got the Red Hot Chili Peppers. We had just done a show up in Cal State Northridge. And three nights later, I said, you guys want to come down? I got $250. You want to play on top of a skate ramp?
Wow.
And that turned into the Vision Skate Escape, which is the videos are still bouncing around the internet as a great event where skateboarding was spending money. They got the guy that did Blade Runner. Design like these ramps, and we had a double ramp and Tim Payne. So I kind of got really in with the skate world again, and that kind of turned into, you know, boarding for breast cancer and board aid shows, all those great old board aid shows where we do a board across and have a vert ramp, and we'd get, you know, Pennywise or Offspring or these bands to play up in the mountains. And literally I was sitting in the snow one day after, you know, I'd gotten Perry and to really said you need to play Mountain Song. He wasn't doing any Jane's Addiction songs, and he actually closed with Mountain Song, coming down the mountain. We did this big board across, and shit went bananas.
I'm sure. Everybody.
and kids were snowballs, and you know, I was exhausted, and we worked hard to get the stage because I always wanted to make farther up the mountain than anyone, which meant piece by piece. And I sat there and told my friend Greg Teal, I said, man, this lifestyle's coming together. Like, I'd heard about the X Games coming forth, that they announced this new X Games. And I go, what we've been doing on the coasts is going to start going to the inland. And I said, I need to get out of the music business because I probably have to go get a real job. I'd been doing okay, but I had my first child on the way. And that whole idea of adulthood.
Like time to grow up.
Time to grow up. Yeah. And I said, let's go out for one last summer and see what we can do.
Yeah.
And so it was really quickly came together. I don't think the concept was until the end of March. And we were out by August 1st that first year.
Hey, I'm excited to have a new sponsor on board. This week we got Blue Apron. If you're into cooking, Blue Apron's about to make it a whole lot easier for you. They're gonna save you time, money, make it more convenient, enable you to cook with family, friends, whatever. What they do is they deliver right to your door, fresh and healthy recipes ready for you to cook. They deliver all over the country, 99% of the country, they can get it straight to your door, and it's just the exact amount of each ingredient, so you're not wasting food. It's healthy. The food is all responsibly sourced and sustainable and all that good stuff that makes it good for you and your family. And for me, I like that it's never the same recipe, so lots of variety. Check out this week's menu and you'll get your first three meals free because you're a Rebel Radio listener. That's first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/rebel. I think you'll love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. That's blueapron.com/rebel. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. And did you know immediately that you had something?
A disaster? You know, I think I knew immediately that I was over, you know, that wow, putting on, you know, a show with underground bands, even though they were unknown out on the West Coast, you know, and Quicksand was known on the East Coast. They were, you know, out of Gorilla Biscuits. Civ was coming out of, with the Civ, so he was out there, but I knew the music. But putting it all on a tour together, they didn't really know these bands in Milwaukee. Or that. So we would show up, and, you know, even in Denver and Dallas, a few hundred people would show up. But I think that's where I always tell kids, it's patience in life, you know, allowed me to get a second chance because I'd worked with all these promoters on Lollapalooza and they saw how hard I worked. I mean, that was not an easy tour at the beginning. I mean, we were doing things that had never been done. With, you know, eight bands on a bill, 20-minute set change, you know, just, you know, breaking every union rule, fighting the unions, changing the rules out there. But they gave me a second chance, and that second chance was, you know, I give, you know, want to give NOFX and Pennywise credit for really helping me out there. And they know that, you know, I talk to them often, but they kind of stepped up and had heard how much fun it was and said, hey, we want to be part of this. Because at that point, their agents wouldn't call me back. No one was going to call me back because it wasn't successful the first year. And by having those guys step up a little bit, gave it a little bit of a lot of credibility in the punk rock world, even though I'd worked in the punk rock. World, it was like I was the guy who loaded everyone's vans, or I was the guy running the venues. I wasn't the conceptual guy. And I, you know, it's weird. I think Greg Graffin still has it out. Like, Kevin's the guy that loads the vans. How did he do all this other stuff in life? You know, but they came out. Got lucky with that call from Vans. It wasn't really looking to sponsor my. I thought they were looking to sponsor my tour. But I had 15 minutes to convince them. They were coming to me basically to ask them to help them with their amateur skateboard program. And I was said, no one's going to come watch amateur skating unless it's around my amazing music festival. And we blended it together and became the Vans Warped Tour.
And that, was...
23 summer. Well, they've been with me. This will be our 22nd summer together.
Unbelievable.
So we've been through a lot. And the beginning of that, you know, I look at different timing. I don't know if something like the Warped Tour would get that chance now, because we are in a world of needing instant success and things that I don't know. And the timing was right, and the X Games did time out right. And I think it was being run by, we weren't running it for a brand. You know, Vans is still a great partner, but they don't tell me how to run a tour, and I don't tell them how to make shoes.
What, well, I want to talk about the Vans thing a little bit, but I'm curious, like, so first year was a struggle.
Second year was a super, second year the crowds grew. But we were getting paid nothing.
Yeah.
We really weren't, because the promoters were like, then they were hard on me. Yeah. They were really hard on me. They're like, look, Evan, you know, you're going to come out here and, you know, it'd be like, if you don't get every band on stage, do this giant storm coming, you know, we're pretty mm-hmm. risky. We had like, you know, night, and, you know, we'd had bands playing less than, under a blue tarp trying to get the music in. And, you know, we were kicked off out of a couple of venues because we were trying to blend to this idea of punk rock, selling your T-shirt yourself, because Pennywise showed up and says, we're not letting the guy in the golf shirt. You know, we call them golf shirt people, you know, and, you know, it's no disrespect. I wear a golf shirt and golf courses,
but I get it.
You know, it's like I always used to have the saying, never trust a person in a golf shirt. That was the kind of the punk rock mentality. So we were trying to blend that world of running a venue into this idea of what I was trying to do of not writing set times, selling your own T-shirts, kind of being a little bit, you know, loose, but it was very tight in the background. Mm-hmm. Warped Tour has always looked like control. It's a controlled chaos situation, but that's what makes it still what it is.
So did it ever get easy? Did it ever get easy? No.
Every year is its own challenges.
Yeah.
You know, I'm facing my challenges this year. You know, in 2000, whatever it is, so you said I'm lost in time. It's funny how often I've said 2018 or 16, but 2017, I'm facing my own new set of challenges. We've got a huge world of festivals out there right now. I've talked a lot about this last week, about the, you know, for the past couple of years about the festival bubble. Like, how many festivals can this culture absorb? And I think right now we're starting to see we're maxed out. And so a lot of bands have a lot of choices. You know, are you going to grab money on weekends from festivals, or are you still looking to build your career over time? I think we're in a toss-up point. Is there still a place for something like Warped Tour, developing acts? Do bands still have that in their mind? Where, you know, this year I was deep thinking, there was bands and where availability, you know, who was available too? A lot of bands might be in Europe. They're touring the world now. It's a world music business. And I really was thinking that, you know what, maybe this was that time, the culture of America, right? I felt that energy coming this summer. I felt this kind of undertone of unrest, kind of. And I thought, well, the world might be going more for bands that are going to have things to say. So when I started booking this lineup, I really was thinking, you know, and that's why we have bands, because I think, and it's not that bands don't want to say anything, but sometimes they were afraid that if they said the wrong thing, it'd be blow up on the internet with it before they got to explain themselves or what they really meant. So people just stopped talking or standing for anything. So this year's lineup is really, I think it's interesting. It's not maybe the lineup we've had the last couple of years, but I had to challenge myself too, because you can't keep going back and booking the same bands. Of course, you can always go back and book Less Than Jake and Real Big Fish, because they never get old. You know, they're the band that you could go see all the time, and, you know, ska never gets old. But I had to go find some of those. So bringing bands, you know, great messages, Sonic Boom 6.
There was a boy that I knew at school, never want to break any rules, never many friends because he wasn't exactly cool, treated like a fool to be fair, never scored a 40 so the other kids did not care, just a nerd till he heard them on the woods screaming fuck you, I won't do what you tell me.
Went and bought the tape the next day, within a week he's got the words in his memory.
You know, Anti-Flag coming back, and this band War on Women, and Ashana's got a lot to say right now about young women and where their role is in the world and how they, you know, need to stand up for what they believe in. So, you know, and then we're going to have, you know, some of the real fun bands out there. But it's, you know, I think it's taken a moment for people to kind of get their heads around the lineup again. And and even I think a little older audience is starting to look at it and go, wow, I haven't been to Warped Tour in a few years, but wait a second, there's enough punk there, and you know what, I've never got a chance to see Gwar, and you know, and it's cool to go see young bands. So, you know, you challenge it each year, and, you know, you challenge, you know, are the tours, you know, and I'm, it's not, no blame, there's no blame in this business, but everyone's overworked, everyone's working two or three of the jobs that they used to work one. So the details, some people, you know, like routing up right on top of each other. Bands seem to be in the same city, same like-minded bands playing in the same city on the same day, understanding that there is a finite number amount of money for kids to spend on entertainment. And, you know, despite what we think sometimes, this economy is, people are getting by week out there. And they can't afford to go to two or three shows in the same week. So that's the challenges we're facing right now.
So what about you? What especially in those early years, what enabled you to push through that and kind of keep going? I mean, this stuff is, this is hard stuff to deal with.
Because I think I've simplified it in my mind that You know, we are creating entertainment. We are creating fun for people. And fun can create education. That's why you always see the philanthropic side or the educational side of what we're doing. Because when you're having fun, your mind is open to other things. So that back in 95, I was actually thinking about going, what would be my next job? And I thought, well, maybe I'll go back and get my teaching degree. There was a need for teachers around that time. Maybe I'll go back and do that. So now, kind of to fill your head in what you're doing, to continue working as hard, because you know I'm still working 12, 16 hours a day a lot of times, and I'll be on the road for 2 months putting on these shows, is I look at it that, and you have to keep going, is the drive is that maybe in some ways I've created the largest classroom in America. And that classroom spills over to young people getting into the business. And now you go out, my wife, was out at Coachella this week, and she said, you know, I know you're proud that all these people are running departments out at Coachella because they learned how to work hard out on the Warped Tour. So you're training a new type of tech and they're in demand. I also look at the nonprofits that have grown out of Warped Tour, you know, To Write Love on Their Arm, Keep Abreast. We work with 100 nonprofits throughout the summer on Warped Tour. That canned food drive that most people don't know about, really, unless you're a fan of Warped Tour. We collected 460,000 pounds of food at the front.
And I read that. That's unbelievable.
You know, the blood drives, the, you know, music, and you know, now we're entering a new phase. And I didn't realize that, like, counselors were so cut from school budgets that you may have one counselor at a high school in charge of 2,000 kids. And they don't have the resources, so, you know, voice for the innocent. Because, we, you know, the Warped Tour hasn't come without controversies. And I think life is about controversy. You know, if you you can't run through pablum your whole life. Sometimes you're going to have issues you deal with. And, you know, a couple years ago we had an issue, and I didn't realize that the resources for young women that are sexually abused in young years are so limited, or they don't know where to go. So teaming up with a voice for the innocent, which is great. They were great last summer. They passed out cards in each city with resources behind where kids can use this to get help. Because I'm at school, we were at a hotel, and it was all turned into that. It was high school counselors there. It was weird. Fortuitous on a day off outside Colorado. And I talked to them, and they told me just how tough their jobs are. And I started showing them the cards that we give out. And they're like, wow, we don't even know about these resources in our markets. So that's stepped into a whole new thing that we're expanding this year with the crisis text hotline. Because now that kids aren't necessarily willing to call on the phone and express what's going on in their life, they'll text. There's a whole organization out there for them. So you do that, and then you put on some great, some bands, and most of the bands are out there, and 90% of the kids want to run around and have fun in the sun, and that's really what a summer should be about. And 10% of them, like any classroom, kind of, let's say, overachieve in a way. And on the way out, sign up to register to vote. You know, I think you probably remember the Rock for Choice shows and that we used to do here in L.A. or the Rock the Vote shows. I mean, every 3 weeks we were putting on another benefit in L.A. And now it's harder. We understand that bands can't play benefits because that's how they tour and they make their money. But there's ways to get their messages out more. So we're continually trying to blend artists into the new way of philanthropic missions. So there's enough each day to keep me busy and entertained. And it's also, I'm having, you know, overall it's hard. There's days that are hard, and there's days I'm like, you know what, I should just go do, I was involved in and taking that branding side of what I've done with Taste of Chaos or Mayhem or Warped or some of these other projects. And I was, you know, a partner with St. Archer Brewery, which was back to the roots of where I came from. It was all surfers and skaters and that lifestyle. And they were like, create a great product, which the beer was good. You can't sell a beer if it's not good for that long, especially in this era. And it was great. So reconnecting with people like Paul Rodriguez and Mikey Taylor and Taylor Steele, and then Josh, who's a brilliant guy who founded the company. You know, I'm working with them on Villager Goods now, which is we're moving into coconut water and health products. So we're down to San Diego. Working with Haley Williams on her hair dye company, Good Dye Young. So a lot of the entrepreneurs the entrepreneurs that I've met out in the parking lot, they're coming to me kind of almost as maybe somewhat in a mentor position. And I'm enjoying that. You know, getting out and speaking and teaching a lot, running hard. You know, I decided that right now, the way the country is, music through diplomacy is always been a topic. You know, and music brings people together. So we're you know, Warp's going over to Japan to do a couple shows next spring. We took over. There was Punk Spring in Japan. It's now going to become Warp Spring.
Cool.
We're doing Mexico City next month. Nice. I mean, it's coming together really quick. Yeah. But going, I think it's important right now that, you know, we show that we're the, you know, music and people in these countries have a lot of things in mind that are alike.
Sure.
And the propaganda that we maybe are fed, not even probably, you don't want to say propaganda. The new, what we're fed each day by our leaders doesn't necessarily reflect what's in everyone's hearts. Mm-hmm. Because I did a documentary. I got to go to Burma this year.
Oh, wow.
In Thailand. So we shot for 10 days over there about the Karen tribes and the persecution of them. And 99% of the people in the, 99.9% of the people in this world just want to live in peace. They really do. And those voices have to be heard, and music is what has been always a way to express that.
Yeah. Do you think that's, is that changing? Like, is music's role in culture changing, or is that remain constant?
I think the role of people having a voice and speaking out, because they were afraid that, I don't want to stand for anything, because if I stand for something, there's going to be people that are going to attack me on a daily basis, you know, online and social media, and this is going to affect my career and potential. But I think you're seeing it. You're going to see a new wave of people and of people that said, okay. And I'm not just saying in politics. I'm saying in those canned food drives, in blood drives, or if I stand for. There's so many things for the environment. You know, we're really focusing on the environment this year, because if it's true what they're talking about doing, there's certain things we can't control. But on a local level, we're telling kids, you know what? Get involved and stencil the storm drains.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if one less person throws a cigarette butt down them, that helps.
Yeah.
Help on a local level.
Yeah.
And that's what you do in times like this when there's so much unrest, you know, on a macro scale.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're at a point, you probably could have delegated a lot of this and, you know, maybe not work so hard. Is that, like... Is that just the way you're cut, or is it that, you know, that's how you have to run a business?
And it's not true. I have delegated a lot. It's strange. I have like a, and for what we do, we have a very, we only have 4 full-time employees.
Wow.
At Forfini. We have 4 people. And they're 4 women.
Yeah.
And they're just forces of nature.
Mm-hmm.
They are fantastic at what they do.
Mm-hmm.
I trust them explicitly with getting things done for me, and they know what can get, and then they know when to come for me. But instead of the things I used to fill that void of maybe the micromanagement, I've now filled it on the larger scale. And you know, I sit there and go, oh, I'm going to reach out to, you know, I'm talking to Argentina about maybe let's go down there and do a show, or relaunching Australia. You know, so I seem to always fill up that time that way. And, you know, the biggest thing is I've got my anniversary coming up here, which is in this business, you know. You know, Fran's been wonderful. My wife put up with good times and bad times. If you definitely said that for better or worse, I think she's been there. And, you know, we've almost been married, I think, 24 years coming up next week. You better not forget. Well,
we
tend to both forget. We're so busy.
I'm sure.
And then that's how our lives are. You blend them back together. And, you know, I have a daughter graduating Loyola New Orleans this month. And one just picked college. And she's picked her. She's going to go into physics and environmental engineering, or, you know, double major. So it's good. So having some stability there has allowed me to kind of do what I'm doing now.
And I read somewhere that your kids were involved in the tour. Yeah, at different points.
It's turned into their, you know, their summer jobs. Yeah. They work really hard, and they don't get to be the, and people know they're not the boss's kids. They work as hard as anyone.
Yeah.
And Sierra runs our nonprofit area.
Cool.
So she's coordinating all the local nonprofits that will be coming out for the day or the whole summer now. And she gets, and she's kind of like me. She's thinking, okay, this year we need to have a open mic tent. We're going to do this summer. You know, so she graduates in a couple of weeks, and we're going to drive back across the country together, bring her car home and everything.
Nice.
So we'll have some time to plan what's going on. And my other daughter comes out since she was 14 and works in the production office.
Mm-hmm.
And she is a, like, they love, she's just super organized, super thoughtful, and works really hard.
That's cool.
So it's been nice for me, because as I've replaced, when I used to tour with my peers, when I was touring with Pennywise and Bad Religion, and it was definitely more of that, we're on tour together.
Sure.
You know, and now I'm kind of one, I'm physically tired out there. It's a very tiring tour. But two, it's also, I'm either a mentor or a disciplinarian. So it's nice to be able to travel with your daughters. And
yeah,
I think, you know, they're, none of them, you know, my, every time they go get their own jobs or anything, it's like, wow, they work hard.
Yeah.
And that's what Warped Tour does. Ultimately, yeah, it's just a hard-working group of people. And I always say, it's nice to work in a group of people, everyone, from the kid that has to put up that one 10 by 10 tent for a band and do their t-shirts. Everyone, for 2 months, gives a crap as a society for the success of that space. And we move a city each day.
So there's that, like, you know, there's that saying, like, work smart, not hard. Is that just bullshit?
I think for some people, but there's no cutting corners, really. You know, you get out there and work hard. I mean, I was allowed to do Warped Tour, especially the second time, because of those, you know, 12 and a half, 13 years that I worked in L.A., 320 nights a year. And I didn't live in L.A. I drove to Claremont back to, I lived in a log cabin with no heat, but I grounded myself, too. I realize now that there was something there that made me drive down that 10 freeway.
Yeah.
I won't even do it now. It's so long. If I get in my car from Pasadena, it's like, oh, my God, how did I, you know. But that was a lot of people out there. We all worked together. We supported each other, the community out there. And whoever was could drive at night would work that day with me in town, because I'd put every energy into running the show, and by the time I got in the car, I needed, like, it was just collapsed. But I woke up by a stream, believe it or not, a stream, you know, and had, you know, it was nice, and it was just that hour of regrounding, because now I read everyone's books.
Yeah.
And I can read the Motley Crue books or the Chili Pepper books, and I go, oh, I remember that night.
Sure.
I was like the fly on the wall loading the gear out of the dressing rooms or the stages, and oh, that night that happened, I didn't go to those parties. And now it's trying to explain to my daughters, too, that, you know, there was that thing. I kind of kept my distance a little bit. But they knew I was working hard for them.
Yeah.
And she's a little nervous because, you know, she's going to go to a school that's known for baby party school. And I go, it's okay, because people who do drugs don't hang out with people that don't do drugs.
Right.
And I learned that early on, because I'd be touring with people. And I felt weird because they didn't invite me to the parties. I go, oh, don't they like me or anything? But I think they were going to go do drugs, and they didn't. They were going to be uncomfortable doing them around me, and I would probably get uncomfortable around them.
Yeah.
And but we kept our working relationships very, very solid out on the road. You know, they knew that, you know, if I was doing their tours or working with them at local show, they were going to have a great show, or the best show possible. So it was, there was some grounding there, you know. And now I'm kind of, you know, you get reflective. You know, I just turned 56 last week. And everyone's like, oh, yeah, that's, and I'm like, well, yeah, I've been doing this for 35 years. That puts me around 21.
That's what happens, right?
Yeah, that's what happened. Yeah. Those years go by, and I said, you only get old if you look in the mirror.
Right.
You know, it's the only time you get old.
Otherwise,
you look in the mirror, you just get up, and you do what you do.
So, like, all these sort of values you're talking about, I know you said there's four people, but when you staff up for tour, I think I read it was like over 900 people.
Well, 900 people with bands and crews and everyone out there, a couple other people,
So how do you maintain a culture at that scale?
Well, I think it was, you know, it goes back to like those early days, like why do you have a barbecue after the shows each night? You try to show people they're all equal. Because I worked in a business of hierarchy at the business. It was like the headliner dressing room. Or the headliner puts his drums on the drum kits and everyone stacks them in front, those kind of things. But the punk rock world was kind of like, oh, we'll move our drum kit. And if we have a half a pizza, the opening band can have a quarter of it. And it was kind of that community. And I think I try to build that community out there, too. You know, and I'm there every day. I'm not calling this show in. And even when there's maybe been a problem with an artist, and you know, I'd have to deal with a label or something back in the day, not so much anymore. You were saying Atlantic, and I think Sugar Ray was on Atlantic, if I remember. Sugar Ray was on Atlantic, and you know, there was that moment in time where they were selling 70,000 records a week on Warped Tour on a 1 foot stage. And they came to me and said, you know, label screaming at me, and everyone like, we got to put them up on the biggest stage out there. And I'm like, no, because I think there's only one fly on this first album. That was a hit song, and I didn't hear anything else on that album. And I knew Mark from the clubs. He was in Shrinky Dinks. And I was, and I said, look, guys, I understand if you have to leave, but this is how I run my tour. And I went on the bus and explained to Mark. I said, you know, if you you'll have more hits if you write it, you know, but you don't have them on this album. And if you, I go out and move you, you're building a lot of credibility for life. And they've always had it. Sugar Ray's had credibility in the punk world. I think a lot of it came from that parking lot, because they hung out. They powered through it. And they went on and wrote amazing, amazing hits. So it's kind of true. And I also look back that the smallest band on the main stage that year was Blink-182. Now, if I had bumped them, Mm-hmm. Would they have ever come back and played for me again?
Sure.
Probably not. No. So, you know, I'm like, you get it if you're on Warped Tour. And some people don't do Warped Tour because that's not their thing, and that's okay.
Yeah.
And that's all right.
Yeah.
But I'm proud that a lot of the bands that have been around now, 25 years or so, are bands that have come back and played Warped Tour on a consistent basis, that are putting out, you know, and replenish their fan base. I love that Every Time I Die is having some of their biggest moments right now, because I knew that band was so good. Mm. Their music just had a cycle to the place, you know? And that's being nice. You have to be nice. Mayday Parade, The Main, all these bands are just nice people. Yeah. So you want them to succeed. So you give them the chances until all of a sudden their music makes sense.
Yeah.
And they're all having great moments of their career.
Yeah. So I know you're super involved in the set times.
Yeah.
That seems like, I think from the outside, that seems like a sort of a trivial.
It's a huge thing to make. It comes from, you know, that being the stage manager of Lollapalooza in 1991. And watching Henry Rollins every day at 1:20 in the afternoon go on stage and do what Henry does.
Yeah.
Never seen Henry, watch him play live. It's an explosive thing. Mm-hmm. And every day from 1:20 to 1:50, he would just be Henry, just killing it.
In front of nobody.
In front of a bunch of empty seats and maybe a few kids up in the lawn.
Yeah.
And then we would have some field shows. It was nice, we'd play some fields and there would be some kids in the front, but still it was a small crowd.
Yeah.
And every day I would sit there and go, man, if Henry could just open for Jane's Addiction one night, that would be huge for his career, because, you know, this was pre-social media.
Sure.
I think just about now, like, you take some of those young acts. And that's why 90% of the audience is in line at Warped Tour at Doors, because they don't want to miss their band, but then you can thread that through.
Yeah.
And it is a lot of work. I got to sit there every morning and write it out and put it all together.
Sure.
But I think it's worked because of that, and I think bands have broken because of that.
Yeah.
Because if you go on a big tour, and I don't know if big tours are breaking acts, like, you know, because you used to fill up the big tour if you were the opening act with all the radio stations.
Right.
And a label would use that, but there's less and less of that availability out there.
Absolutely.
So you're playing for as entry music coming in. So how do you tie that and go from there?
Yeah.
So I still believe writing this game. And that's what I'm saying. People are going, well, what's new this year? I go, not a lot's new. We just tweak it a little bit. Warps still feels like that backyard party that it started out to be. We tweak it each year to kind of fit what's going on in the world.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to, because some people call me and go, well, you know, why don't you get a big headliner now? And I go, well, one, if I got a big headliner, there would be the budget for all the small bands.
Right.
And two, people would just start coming in the evening. If Warp doesn't work and goes away at some point, it's okay, because we've been there 23 years. We weren't supposed to be there a second year. And no one's been a traveling touring festival longer than this.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's things I'm trying to work, and I tell the labels, bring me ideas or things you need, and maybe I can help fix them. Mm-hmm. Don't tell me things now that we could have discussed in October.
Sure. Yeah. So. You mentioned all these new festivals popping up, and, you know, we see them everywhere. What is it that you wish these young promoters would know?
It's building. I think you have to take your time to build a successful festival. I think, you know, there's that rare thing, but whatever I'm finding that rare thing, and I'm going to be speaking in Florida this week, and I know I'm going to meet the guy who started Okeechobee Festival, which is having a lot of success, but he has a fantastic location.
Yeah.
And he's building the culture of that festival.
Sure.
You know, and who knows where that culture is going to go. I mean, I don't think when Paul started Coachella, he thought it would become that type of culture at that festival. Paul comes from the punk rock world.
Right.
Just like I didn't know, you know, we come from that. And, you know, it your festival, you have to, you kind of flow with the culture of the festival. There's festivals that aren't doing as well because I think I thought they were, you know, locking in on just the lineup now. It can't just be about the lineup because there's great lineups everywhere.
Sure.
And everyone's playing festivals. So people are literally, we're in that NASCAR situation. I'm a student of NASCAR.
Are you?
Where NASCAR's, it's got to this point where they were big sponsors, the ticket prices went up, getting there was expensive, the hotel, that the fans just had, that their economic status of that fan for the core of it was a certain amount. Mm-hmm. And once they went over that threshold, people just went like, you know, I'll stay home.
Yeah.
I'll stay home, watch it on TV.
Sure.
And now they don't know what to do. Yeah. I mean, their attendance keeps going down.
Is that right?
So they just brought Monster in to try to young up the audience. Mm. But the first thing Monster, which is Monster's culture, is they had the Monster girls that you see at right. Supercross and Leather. But they realized that the religious basis of NASCAR,
doesn't
all of a
work.
Sudden it was like prostitutes and strippers and Satan is in the parking lot, you know? So it's understanding your audiences. And I think festival people need to really understand their audiences.
Yeah.
And, you know, this year I know some people, you know, some people are really happy with the lineup and some are not going to be happy with it. But it wasn't not trying to understand what they had. It was maybe what was available to put on and present this summer.
So how do you, you know, I see this with Coachella and, you know, I'm friends with those guys as you are. But like every year, you know, the Coachella announced, the lineup's announced and everyone, and like, you know, feels like everyone's unhappy with the lineup. And then of course they sell out and all that, right?
I always say the worst day of a festival producer's career is the best and worst day is announcing your festival.
Yeah.
Because you're excited to get it out there, but now you have to take that instant blowback.
Sure, of course.
And it really comes down to the consumer's choice if they want to go or not. And
but I
think Paul pockets his festival very well for that audience that is buying not knowing the bands that are on it. You know,
absolutely.
He's got a good ear. Right now, hip-hop is definitely back into the forefront, and that lineup is pretty hip-hop set. But he's not abandoning his dance fans. Right. I mean, I know that at 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, it may be a little like crickets out there for the bands, but that dance tent is going.
Mm-hmm.
He couldn't just say, I'm not going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But he always does things that, you know, I know that feed your soul.
Sure.
You do things, and that's why he built that glass house tent this year. Where the Interrupters played and things like that, and TSOL, I guess, got a chance to play out there.
Nice.
Which is, I know that's for his soul, and that's why I did that It's Not Dead festival a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
I was struggling. I was kind of struggling with, like, where I'm at. I'm not as happy as I usually am.
Yeah.
And I was thinking that, wow, you know, maybe I need that punk rock back in my life.
Uh-huh.
And I said, I'm going to put on see if I can pull this together. It had never been done where you really get Descendants, Bad Religion, NOFX, and Pennywise on the same show in LA.
That's cool.
And
so how do you decide what feedback to pay attention to, right? Because you're always going to have, whether it's haters or people that are just, you know.
Well, now it's really easy because you kind of go through, and if your hate's coming on Twitter, you can go into that person's profile and see if they're really that hateful.
Right.
Or they're just spewing.
Right.
And 90% of the time they're just spewing, really are. Because the tweet before it'll be, what color is your kitty's eyes?
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I had a great pizza. What are you eating?
Right.
And then they'll send out this vile thing to you.
Yeah.
You know, the 10%, then you kind of really, you know, look at and go, okay, this is who I can learn from.
Yeah.
Maybe, okay. If that starts coming together. And it takes time.
Yeah.
But the worst thing you could do, you can't negotiate with the internet.
Right.
You know, I thought 2 years ago, because punk rock was about, we used to really, that confrontation was good.
Of course.
But we've bred confrontation out of our schools
mm-hmm.
because the professors are so scared to challenge their students
mm-hmm.
because of being culturally inappropriate or saying the wrong thing can get them fired. So education, my professors challenged me and I challenged them.
Yeah.
I guess I've always challenged the norm.
Yeah.
But you learn from that. But we've watered down the society, and I think right now is a very interesting thing because conflict is we're trying to figure out how to, conflict is happening. There's a lot of conflict happening mm-hmm. here. And you have that very small percentage. And I said, Trump's wasn't to worry, but maybe we're getting worried at some of the things he's doing. But it was the 3% of the people he was empowering.
Mm-hmm.
But you look at over on the left, you know, the left too, the 3% that are empowering, mm-hmm. and they're going, feeling that it's all right to show up and just beat the shit out of each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the other people in between, the 97% of each time, have to learn how to start communicating to figure out how to move this world forward again.
Yeah.
But we forgot how to communicate because it was all in short blasts and tweets or this and this, that we're going to have to come back and figure out a way to communicate again. And that's a challenge, but by denuding the powers of the professors and teachers at the lower levels to challenge their student, yeah, we're not learning how to deal with conflict. And I'm really, that's worrisome to me.
Yeah.
Yo, if you're digging this one, we're gonna go back in the archives, in the vault for you. I want you to listen to my man, Dave Weiner. He runs a label for Tech N9ne called Strange Music. He's the head of the West Coast for Strange. And it's great, kind of like Kevin's story. It's a great story of people building amazing independent businesses in the music business, kind of bucking all of the trends, doing things their own way. Good stuff with Dave Weiner if you want to check that out after you finish this one. That's so I want to go back to the, you talked about Vans.
Yeah.
How do you keep a client sponsor for 22 years?
Well, they're an equity partner. You know, many years ago, you make some deals in this world that
sure,
you look back on it and they're great. They kind of bailed me out because I got sucked into the .com world, mm-hmm, that first run of it. And I could never really understand it.
Sure.
But, you know, there were some people involved in the tour at that point. And, they told me I was going to live in a warped world, which now there's VR, which they're saying we're all going to live in a different world. But back then they said, you're going to live in this warped world, Kevin, and you'll do concerts in this building, and then you'll like sell merchandise to kids. And I'm like, no, man, it's not like, yeah, kids want to go to festivals. Yeah, they want to go sweat on each other. They want to be part, sure, of a culture. Maybe we are getting away from that a little bit now, but mm-hmm, then I'll be gone because I can't see how people are going to sit in their houses. You know, I know that's a big thing. You know, when Live Nation and Michael Rapino and their group, some things about how virtual reality and how they're going to sell tickets to concerts that way.
I don't buy it.
I think it's BS personally, yeah, but that maybe that because I'm 56, maybe there's some 19-year-olds are going, great, I can just watch the concert in my room and it's going to be as gratifying as going to a show. And I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think so.
But we also, you know, we're challenged by, you know, the video gaming world because it used to be that girls went to shows earlier.
Sure, yeah.
You notice that girls went to shows earlier. It was always like, yeah, the band, they come out and see band. And if you, and it working on a label, you'd be like, oh, good female audience. Mm-hmm. I kind of would drive it because eventually the boys would come in a year or two later and when they grew up a little bit and stop hitting each other with sticks and realize that it was fun to go to like social gatherings. And that's how the crowds grew, you know. Yeah. I mean, Warped Tour grew because that year that the Boston's were on, and Teen Magazine put like the best place to meet guys was we were like number six.
No way.
Yeah, Scott drew the girls, you know. So it was like all of a sudden I noticed all of a sudden girls were coming to Warped Tour. It was kind of a guys' fest, like people have thought. And,
yeah.
They would come and, you know, but how do you carry that through now? Because really I'm watching these game and it, you know, they're pulling some girls into the game slowly, but it's still 2-3%.
Sure.
But it's 97% guys that are sitting there watching other dudes play games.
Absolutely.
And how are we going to get them away from that? Or maybe they're going to slip in a girl into virtual reality while they're playing those games and they'll never have to go meet a girl. Who knows? We'll see.
I guess.
Yeah.
I guess.
So a lot of changes, a lot of things going on.
Yeah. I want to do a little speed round.
Give you enough little.
This is great, man.
Tidbits
and
notes.
So much stuff. Well, I just have one question, then I have a quick speed round.
Okay.
But I know, you know, Vans has been an important partner.
Yeah.
What other brands do it right in terms of integrating into culture?
I made the first deal with an energy drink company in music, really.
Yeah.
It was Hanson's Energy.
Oh yeah.
And that was 21 years ago.
How about that? Wow.
The green cans.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And that was 20. Yeah. So I made that with Mark Hall.
Yeah.
And you know, watching how Monster has evolved as a brand, and what they're doing with music, I think is a great thing. You know, we can talk about other. I think Red Bull does great things. I think the energy drink things. Rockstar's been a big supporter of our programs. They kind of get how to work with the artists and things developing.
Yeah.
Then you have, you know, some of the other brands that we you know that I like working with, and it's fun to have some of them coming back this year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Hard Rock and Skull Candy, some of the brands that maybe weren't with us for years, because cool. experiential marketing kind of went away. Everyone thought we were just going to have a kid with a, you know, with a tweet or something would work your brand, you know, help your brand. Now they're saying we need to have that interaction with people in great spaces to be at these events. So people are dusting off those old activation trucks and figuring them up a little bit and getting out on the road. But in truth, the anti-smoking campaign, we've had a great run with, you know. I think there was brands, and you know, and then if you went into the alcohol world for a long time, Jaeger did a great job with it. Mm-hmm. They lost their core people there, and they lost the essence of that brand in music, and now they're just another brand and fighting it out against the what are they, alcohol companies there aren't.
Fireball.
That's what I was thinking of.
Okay, let me do a little quick speed round. So if you can go back and give one piece of advice to your 18-year-old self, what would it be?
Oh, don't sign that deal with Launch. No, you know.
What talent have you always wished you had more of?
I wish, for me, my talent would be sometimes to focus. You know, focusing is hard when you have the mind. You're kind of jumping all over. And kind of flush out some more of these ideas I have. And I'm really working really hard on that right now. I learned how to say no, and that was a hard thing because I always wanted to say yes. And then I also learned that people, not everyone's going to like you.
Sure.
But most people would respect me, I think, at this point for what I've done.
I think so. If you could choose any other career, what would it be?
Charter boat captain. Yeah, I'd be a charter boat fisherman captain. I love it.
Nice. So if I worked for Warped Tour or for Finney, what's something I would hear you say over and over?
If you worked for Warped Tour or for Finney, it's okay to make mistakes. It's okay to make mistakes. Mm-hmm. I've made a lot of them, but you learn from your mistakes and move on. Move on quickly. My mistake. I forgot. I'm past it already. Being late for your interview twice,
which
I've never done. And now we're past it at this point. So,
who would you be most excited to learn as a fan of your work?
He's passed away right now, but what really makes me feel good is a lot of people say Bill Graham would have really enjoyed what you've done. And I got to meet him in 91 Lollapalooza and watch how he handled Ice-T's posse when they were kind of being a bunch of assholes. And the way he dealt with his business. And I watched him when I sold egg rolls in the Grateful Dead parking lots. And I would watch how he ran those shows.
That's so cool.
And I think if I had the chance now, I think he would have found now he would have told me 19 different ways to do it better.
Sure.
But I would have taken them all very seriously.
Yeah. Well, I know you travel a lot. What's your favorite city to travel to?
Oh, gosh. You know, it's, you know, traveling for me is, you know, I try to find when we say we have a favorite city, that pigeonholes us. I realize that you have to find the best, try to find the best in every day when you're on the road. Mm-hmm. Find something good about there. I'm still looking in St. Louis, but no, every time I'm trying, when I'm at that venue, I'm sure there's great.
So what city has surprised you where you found something really
Lancaster, great. Pennsylvania.
Wow.
I mean, I just came from Lancaster this weekend.
Yeah.
It was my third time in 5 years to go to this conference and teach and speak. Mm-hmm. But I really think that it's also a city that I've seen was progressing and getting a little better and reinventing itself from its past. But I'm right now it's on that edge. And it was very interesting reading the paper that that if the budget cuts go through, they're going to lose $2.1 million in funding in Lancaster County.
Yeah.
And you hear the people going, but we voted for him.
Mm-hmm.
Not understanding that those cuts are going to be across the board. Sure. And I think they're going to see some backward sliding, you know, the redevelopment. There was a lot of homeless there that they're using the money to help the homeless. There's training going on. And they're talking about all that being cut.
Mm-hmm.
And I think these cities are on the fringe because of the opioid addictions.
Yeah.
You know, early in the morning, I take my walks and, you know, you found needles a few blocks from that really nice downtown.
Mm-hmm.
I think this country's right teetering, and I think a lot of it, people don't, the opioid addiction is so huge right now.
I just read a thing this weekend, it's more deaths than guns and cars accidents combined.
Yeah. I've seen that growing, and you see that kind of despair, and if we take away these services, I said yesterday on my Twitter, I said, we should all get to put on the brick that we're building the wall what we've lost to build that wall. School lunches, gas subsidies for heat, they're all going away.
Mm-hmm.
So every one of us should be allowed to put on our own brick what we lost. and it would be, it's going to be a pretty, it would, it, it's going to be a really a cross section, all voters, all demos, what is potentially going to happen in the next few years. And, and that's, you don't, you can't let that overwhelm you. You have to kind of, so that's where I've kind of gone to that local mentality. Let's do things locally to do the best we can locally.
Yeah. What's the last great book you read?
The last, I'm reading, right, oh God, I've read a lot of books that, in the last few weeks. Hillbilly Elegy.
Okay.
It's a fantastic book. It's on the bestsellers list right now. But it really explains to a person, the coasts, we're all isolated. Mm-hmm. But it really kind of, the migration from the Appalachians through the years to the industrial cities.
Yeah.
And where their mindsets were that when they were probably voting this year. Mm-hmm. So I think people that maybe were angry will understand where they're coming from differently.
Cool.
Right now, I'm almost done with Colony Within a Nation, which is basically trying to explain the mindset of the police officers that are shooting people.
Wow.
And the people that are being shot.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not the mindset of basically we have built a colony that is, it's a colony within a nation. It just kind of explains that we live in fear, white fear, black fear. We all have our fears and how these fears are coming to a head right now.
Yeah.
And so I think I've gone a little bit into that.
That's great.
That kind of, but I want to keep understanding what's going on around me when I travel.
Yeah.
And what's going there, so maybe I can speak to, I mean, you know, simplify it from my early life, I would say, read the local paper and drink the local beer.
Sure.
And I sum it up with a story as you always read the local paper and want to understand what's going on in the local market. And I rolled into Pittsburgh for my first time, and they had just talked about closing the steel mills.
Yeah.
And I went to a bar with a couple people, and everyone I looked around was, you could just tell, was not ready, not in the best. They weren't drinking for fun, they were drinking to forget.
Yeah.
And I looked at everyone drinking a Rolling Rock, and I said, I'll have a Rolling Rock. The two people I was with drank, ordered Heinekens. Uh-huh. Guess who got their ass kicked that night? The guys with the Heinekens. I was able to just kind of like, because, you know, I understood the local mentality.
Sure.
And I relate that to a thing called road dumb. We tend, when we travel on the road, to become very dumb and insular with what we tour with. Understand what's going on in the local market, and it'll get you through life.
That's great. Yeah. That's good wisdom. Okay, what movie do you think you've seen the most?
Shawshank Redemption.
Nice.
I love Shawshank Redemption. Movie. Love that movie.
Watch
still to this point.
Over.
Plus, I have a really bad memory. So, like, my wife will be like, you're watching that movie? I go, this is a really cool movie. She goes, you've seen it like four times, you know? Princess Bride, that one I still love. I don't, you know, don't get a chance. Don't watch as many movies as I'd like. It's like all these TV shows. When you travel the way I do, I'm not a big binge watcher. I loved Escobar and Narcos, things like that.
Yeah.
Fascinated by the culture of cartels and how that's gone in our country. There's some great books I've been reading.
Oh, it's a great book, Narconomics.
Narconomics. Narconomics.
Awesome.
And just it's an amazing time how their culture has blended with our opioids and our big pharma cultures to create what we have right now.
Yeah. Okay, this one is probably hard for you. Is there a band or live performance that stands out as the greatest you've ever seen?
Well, band-wise, I would say for some reason, probably around 84, 85, Stiff Little Fingers. And it was, we were doing downtown. Remember the old Variety Arts Center downtown?
Yeah.
And we were doing three shows in two nights with them. And I really didn't know Stiff Little. So somehow that had slipped through the cracks of my knowledge of bands.
Uh-huh.
And I just will never forget that night. Like two shows on a Saturday and one show on a Sunday. Just going crazy.
Nice.
You know, ongoing, consistent, great shows. Rancid, love Rancid, and now the Interrupters.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have our new punk band. I've always said we need new, great, young punk bands.
Yeah.
Watching the Interrupters, to me, it never gets old.
Really? Cool. Well, dude, thanks for doing
this. Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Thank you. Yo, I hope you enjoyed that. Man, I love talking to Kevin. I could talk to that dude all day. He's just so full of knowledge and passion for what he does. Unbelievable. Hey, make sure you hit us up on Twitter this week at Rebel Radio Net. Find us on Facebook. Check out our YouTube page. We got good stuff happening on YouTube. And most importantly, come back next week for more Rebel Radio. Peace.